Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's a Thursday edition of the Wintrust Business Lunch in the Allstate Showcase Studio along Michigan Avenue. Another beautiful afternoon. Coming up a little bit, you know, I talk about Logical Position, the company, and how they will help you when it comes to managing your website for the business. Chris Vail was on several weeks ago to talk about what they do there, and he's going to come back. You know, one of the things we hear about are Google AdWords and their spot, and I'm not quite sure what that is. So we'll talk to Chris about that and other ways you can manipulate your website to help you get web traffic. But right now, Dennis Rodkin is in the studio, writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. Mr. Rodkin, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Steve, how are you?
Good. Okay. It's very difficult to the campaign, the election, I should say, has absolutely dominated every conversation anyone has had in the past 48 hours.
That's true.
And so I'll just say that, and then we'll move on. Because we've been talking about it off the air, and I don't think you're not going to be able to measure what a president does when it comes to real estate, really, are you?
I think you will be at some point. It's funny you would say that. I got several emails yesterday from people saying you should do a story, you should look into it. And, you know, most of the data is backward looking. It's not until we see, just for example, that houses are sitting on the market longer or that prices pop up suddenly in the first week. The one thing I do know, though, is that in the last 3 weeks before the election, traffic through houses for sale plummeted. I don't think I sent you that story, but both the election and the World Series were blamed. Traffic in the Chicago
because
area.
Because people were busy.
Because people
up.
Were saying, I got too many other things on my mind to go through to set up a showing at a house. This is some data I got from TruePad, which is a Chicago-based company, though they work in other cities as well. And they found this huge drop in traffic through houses. And the one, and this is leading back to your question, the one thing they also saw is that the last time we had a presidential election, 2012, traffic dropped some, not quite as much, and then popped up right
afterward.
After the election. Yeah, so there is a possibility that in the next week, 2 weeks, we see people, you know, I haven't been looking at houses all fall, but I really want to get to one. I want to look at them before they're covered with ice and snow, and they rush out and do it. But in terms of what the next presidency will do to the real estate market, it's going to take us a while to
I mean, obviously, macro policies, and there are impacts on it. I mean, look at the housing crisis or whatever.
Yeah.
But, all right, well, so there's that. You also wrote a story in Cranes this week about the mortgage denial rate and how it's higher for African Americans. I think almost three times higher in Chicago than for white Chicagoans.
Yeah, it's about three times. Black mortgage borrowers are turned down, and this we should say is for conventional mortgages. So it's only those 30-year fixed rate, that sort of thing, turned down at three times the rate as of white buyers. It's one of the biggest gaps between white and black in any major city. One of the positive things is that it's only a three times difference. At the turn of the century, it was about a five times difference.
Is that right?
Blacks were turned down at about five times the rate of whites. And I'm being somewhat sarcastic when I say good, but we do see that it's improving.
If I can be a little naive here, if I were reading this story in 1975 or even 85, I would say, well, this is clearly evidence of racial discrimination when it comes to lending money. Reading it in 2016, my first thought was, well, this is because many of these buyers perhaps are coming from economically disadvantaged households to where they're not able to qualify.
Right.
Am I right or wrong?
I think that's probably true. One of the reasons the data is collected by this federal agency is what was going on in the 1970s, as you described. Blacks were being turned down for mortgages essentially just for being black. And so that's why this data is collected. Now people crunch it all the time to see what can we do to, you know, increase the rate of home ownership. Is there discrimination in lending? Is there overt racial discrimination? But yeah, it looks like there are a couple of things. First of all, blacks were hit far harder by the unemployment crisis that we had during the recession and are still recovering. And many black people in the Chicago area live in majority black neighborhoods, which have been very slow to recover. So
banks are less likely to lend there.
Banks may say, yeah, I don't want to lend there because I don't think this is a performing asset. There are several other reasons, but those are two of the big ones.
All right. So the way to fix this then is to just improve the general economic situation.
I think that's one of the ways to fix our housing market, yeah, is to improve the, because we have, you and I have discussed, we've lost an enormous number of industrial jobs in the past 15 years, which are middle income jobs. We are primarily bringing in headquarters, not all the working people in when corporate relocations happen. We have been slower to rebuild jobs after the recession than almost any other major metro.
I want to take a break and come back and talk about Oprah and her condo. But before that, give me 30 seconds now. Airbnb is, the city's being sued over the Airbnb regulations, right? Airbnb brought 30,000 Was it 30,000 people rented out a room or a house in Chicago last year?
Yeah. And
go ahead.
And so a group of homeowners are suing the city, saying essentially saying you're taking away my rights as a private property owner when you put all these regulations on the use of Airbnb. I should be allowed to talk about my property any way I want on the internet because there are some stipulations. I shouldn't have to collect data on the people who rent because you're invading my renter's privacy. And there are several other ways that this group of homeowners says, basically, leave us alone. It's private property. It's my right to handle it the way I want to.
So why is the city putting these restrictions on Airbnb? Because they want to protect neighborhoods, right? Keep them residential? Or is it about, you know, look, the city collects hotel taxes. It's a revenue source. So I kind of understand why they might want to get revenue from Airbnb as well.
Yeah, I think it's both. There are many people who've said Airbnb hosts should be treated the same way as hotels. You should be subject to all the same taxes.
That's not unfair.
Yeah. But the city is also trying to protect. If I live in a condo building, let's say of 100 condos, and there are two or three Airbnbs where there are people coming down my hall all weekend, every weekend that I don't know.
Right.
You know, every time there's a Cubs game, there are people staying, and some of the other condo owners are not very happy about that.
And that's justifiable too, I think. Well, there, I've spoken.
Yeah. Thanks for your opinions on both. Yeah, I think it's very complicated, and it's not going to be settled just by this case.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to tour Oprah Winfrey's old condo. He'll walk us through slides and everything. 1223, it's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. A lot going on in Washington. You know, President-elect Trump met with President Obama today. Then he headed to Capitol Hill. He's talking with the Speaker and other Republican congressional leaders. We might hear some of those remarks coming up. I know Kim's watching that. Right now, Dennis Rodkin is in the studio, and I want to talk about this Oprah Winfrey condo.
Mm-hmm.
It's Water Tower, right?
Yeah.
That's where it is. Okay, I love the quote from one of the people that you had describe it. It's, quote, a hugely idiosyncratic space adapted to one special lady's lifestyle. No one would come forward to buy it that way.
You know, as a reporter, Steve, when somebody says something like that, you flag it. I got to get this into that story because it was so well described. So the interesting thing about that is that's an agent who works the Water Tower condos quite a bit. She was not involved in the Oprah transactions. The buyers, who are also now the sellers of Oprah's condo, can't talk about Oprah.
So they bought the condo from her a year ago, and now they're breaking it up and redeveloping.
Right. She had a 9,600 square foot condo that was a combination of four condos she had bought over the years.
Two stories?
Yeah, three on one story and then one upstairs.
Did she have to go out to the elevator to get to the other one?
No.
Okay, good.
As I understand it, there was an interior stairs, but there were never any photos. So I think she had cut out the ceiling. So what they're doing, they bought it about a year ago. They bought the whole 9,600 square feet for $4.65 million, which was $3 million less than Oprah was asking. And they have now sold off the first, they've redone and sold off the first piece at $3.5 million. But I don't know, did they spend $700 a square foot on the rehab? The rehab was extensive. It's really beautiful. You saw the pictures. It's a very stylish, really luxurious kind of a place, and they're going to do this with the other three as well.
So there's a chandelier over a freestanding bathtub. Was that Oprah's?
That was nothing. There's nothing left inside
Oprah.
That's
okay.
Oprah's. Yeah.
Well, that's it.
There may be like a piece of wire inside one wall. It's been completely redone. I was thinking, you know, you leave some Oprah touch in there, but they're not doing that.
Well, you know, maybe if it's rainy on Sunday, we can all go through the open house and take a look.
if we're all qualified $3.5 million buyers.
We've talked before about this synagogue, I think, in Uptown.
Yeah.
And we talked when the developers were going to make it a residential.
Mm-hmm.
And how were they going to carve it up and maintain the interior? Well, now there's a suit over that. What's going on?
Yeah, it's very complicated. And what's interesting is you and I were wondering how will they put in housing. They issued plans to the city to put in 40 housing units in this 28,000 square foot synagogue, preserving most of the stained glass so that a lot of these homes would have, you know, stained glass windows. Right after their plans came out, I found a lawsuit. A colleague of mine found a lawsuit, and I reported on it. There had been a couple of years of struggle between the congregation and the rabbi.
Right.
And it was the rabbi and his sons were officers. One of the rabbi's sons signed the sale deed.
And so they're arguing that
the congregation is saying he didn't have the right to sign it. So what they're saying is, no, you can't sell it, so let's void the sale and give it back.
I giggled a little bit just because it's like a family fight, or, you know, it's just like, yeah, an old-fashioned church fight, it sounds like.
Totally. But what's interesting
is the synagogue's been empty, right?
The synagogue's been empty for quite a while. And the sale went through. You know, the sale has closed, which is not to say that the court might not at some point say, yeah, we agree, you have to give it back. It has happened with single family homes, but it's so odd. You know, we've sold it, and then here comes this lawsuit saying, yeah, he may have signed to sell it, but he can't sell it. Give it back.
All right. So that is any idea when that might be resolved? I mean, it could be.
No, years. Nobody involved in the case would talk to me. So I'm going to watch it as it proceeds through the Cook County docket. It could be, you know, it could be thrown out in a week, or it could work its way through the courts for five years.
Is there a stay on them? Can they continue to develop it?
That I don't know, because the developers won't talk to me either. It's so hard when you cover a lawsuit like this because nobody wants to say anything. But I would imagine that they don't want to move forward just in case. I'm sure they have advice from their counsel. We think this will fail, or we think this will succeed. But either way, they've got to be going slow.
Well, good to see you again, Dennis. And I'll see you Sunday at the walkthrough at Oprah's Place.
Exactly.
Dennis Rodkin. And you can read more of those stories at ChicagoBusiness.com. All right. See you in a week or two.
Thanks.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Now, we talk a lot about disruptors on this program, and we have one in Washington, D.C. today. Donald Trump, the president-elect, met at the White House with President Obama today, and then it was up to Capitol Hill where he's talking to Speaker Ryan and other congressional Republican leaders. And we might hear some response from that coming up in the next few minutes, and if we do, Kim Gordon will bring it to us. Right now, Mark Hamrick is the senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com, and he joins us a little bit to talk about that disruptor. Mark, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I'm sitting here midway between the White House and the Trump International Hotel, which seems to be quite appropriate at this moment.
Yeah, those two buildings aren't very far apart, are they?
No, they aren't. I'm about two blocks from each. As you might know, the new hotel was built in the old post office pavilion here in D.C., which was neglected for many years. It's right along Pennsylvania Avenue, which candidate Trump mentioned he'd have a place on Pennsylvania Avenue one way or the other. I think he probably likes the one he ends up getting.
I just would like to have seen him the moment he walked into the Oval Office today because, I mean, what a dramatic moment for a person.
Yeah, and, you know, it's hard for many people, I think, right now to put political differences aside because this has been such an emotional process and in some ways a rhetorically violent one. But personally, as one who's lived in Washington for 30 years, the Washington area, to me it's quite moving to see someone along the lines of Donald Trump and someone along the lines of Barack Obama, both of whom probably would never have been predicted to have been presidents of the United States, sitting there in the Oval Office, shaking hands, and really having this peaceful transition of power, as difficult as the campaign process has been.
You know, I didn't plan on talking about this, but since you bring it up, there is something I've been thinking about in the past 24 hours or so. You mentioned the rhetoric of the campaign and how violent it is, and, you know, juxtapose that with this sedate meeting now in the Oval Office. And there are a lot of things we have to fix, but one of them is we've got these candidates who go out and they gin up hatred or disdain or disgust on both sides of the other candidates and the other candidate supporters, and then the candidates seem to be able to put that aside. But the rest of us are still in a frenzy, and we don't follow them along. And I just think that's a problem when it comes to governing.
It's a good point. It's like you're stirring up a hornet's nest and then being able to go inside a net, right?
Well, right.
The rest of us aren't in the net yet. And for those of us who have been in Washington for a long time, we've seen this process before, but the various aspects of it and the sort of universality of it that now seems to reign with the addition of social media and all of these things, you know, I think to some degree people are suffering from some form of PTSD.
Yeah, I think so. I was looking forward to the quiet, but not quite the shock in the quiet. Okay, so you quoted it after the election in the Washington Post as saying the U.S. economy and financial markets suddenly find themselves in no man's land. I want your comment on that, but it seems as if the man's land or the woman's land that they're in now is this frenzy over infrastructure spending. Wall Street seems to love what they're seeing so far.
Yeah, and you know, when I gave that comment, it was really immediately after the election resolution, let's say, that we knew Donald Trump was president-elect, and I was trying to put one and one together very quickly. And I suppose I stand by all of that, but obviously it takes on a broader detail and context now. And what I really mean is, just as Trump himself was mounting an unprecedented style of campaign, this transition in many ways is unprecedented, because you have someone who, for better or for worse, has never been in elected office before. Many comparisons are made to Ronald Reagan, but Ronald Reagan was a governor of the large state of California and
right.
leader of a Screen Actors Guild. So even that comparison doesn't quite hold up. But you're right. The financial markets have embraced this, and I would say, I think much to the surprise of just about everyone, the explanation seems to be that essentially professional investors do not want to be found flat-footed again after having essentially been proven wrong on the way they reacted to the Brexit vote, in the sense that markets recovered after that initial very difficult sell-off. And it is true that if Trump is successful, that should lift many boats, and that's the very thing that his supporters sent him to Washington to do. I think the other question is, we have this sort of financial markets honeymoon. Well, what about the other parts of what he had talked about disrupting trade, as you use the word disruptor, which is a good one? What about the building of the wall? What about the dealing with immigrants in our country? Those are the parts that are not quite so, might I say, palatable to the financial markets. And right now we seem to be looking at the glass half full, which is fine, but we also need to think about the other things that essentially he campaigned on.
One of the things that you experts always say, and it must be true, I don't always have a grasp on it, is that the markets hate uncertainty. Well, the markets are going up this week, but you just described a lot of uncertainty that's ahead of us.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a problem with that statement, which I, you know, use all the time myself, and that is, to some degree, we're always living in a state of uncertainty, right? But there's a greater sense of confidence about, let's say, what you can see and what you can't see. So it's a little like driving your car, daylight, you can see the road farther ahead, nighttime, not so much. And I think the fact that we do have a president-elect, there's no, let's say, legal challenge to right. the election, which seemed to have been a risk a month ago, and we have a Congress which is prepared to move legislation forward. Just a few days ago, none of that seemed possible, and Washington was seen still at risk of being stalemate city. None of that seems to be the risk right now, for better or for worse, depending on where you stand in the political process.
Is part of this reaction to the fact that the Republicans now hold both houses of Congress and the White House, that stalemate, good or bad, will be broken? Is that a factor in it?
I think it absolutely is, because you can imagine all these pieces of legislation coming forward. And, you know, Donald Trump, if he remains true to his supporters, needs to be mindful of the people who would have been potentially Democratic supporters not that long ago, and probably some were supporters of Barack Obama. And that means, you know, keeping an eye out for those that have not been served well by this economic recovery. And that doesn't mean just accepting the typical slate of proposals that, let's say, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce would like for them to move forward.
He's going to reveal himself as a Democrat.
Well, I've been thinking that he's sort of a Republican in name only, given the fact that he does seem to have occupied both sides of any number of positions over time. I suppose Will Rogers or some classic humorist would say that's pretty typical of politicians, right?
Yeah, but he's not one, or he wasn't one until recently.
Yeah, exactly, but he is one now, that's for sure.
One other, we're talking to Mark Hamrick, the senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com, and about the fact that the markets have taken off, especially the Dow, especially, since the election. Is it possible that this correction is still, that it hasn't sunk in, or that there's a little euphoria now, but in a week or 10 days, it might reverse itself?
Oh, I do think there's that, because I think we're living in volatile times, and that volatility applies to financial markets, and we don't know what's going to present itself. We never do. What happens on the international scene, what happens domestically, what happens with the American public, what kind of things that we just can't anticipate come forward. I also want to point out to your audience something that might not have gone noticed or mentioned in the headlines.
Sure.
That is, you know, we talk all the time about what the Federal Reserve might or might not do, but interest rates in the marketplace have already repriced higher. So in the last several days, we've seen the benchmark 10-year treasury go up essentially 0.33%. And it may be that we do see higher interest rates going forward. A large part of that is going to depend on just how successful the new administration and Congress can be in getting growth moving at a higher rate, and then, of course, how the Federal Reserve reacts to all that as well.
Mark, you helped make things more understandable. Thanks very much for joining us today.
My great pleasure. Thanks so much.
You bet. We'll do it again soon. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:52. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, you hear me reading the commercials for Logical Position, and I've talked to them in the past about ways to make my website, Steve Bertrand Travel, a little more effective when it comes to bringing in clients. That's what they do. And Chris Vail was on with us a few weeks ago. He's back in the studio with us today. Chris, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Glad to be here.
All right, so let's just start with a little expository statement or two about what Logical Position does, because I think a lot of us think, well, we put a spot up, we put a web page up, and people are going to find us, but there's a lot more to it than that.
Yep, that's right. So we specialize in internet marketing or digital marketing, and primarily helping businesses run their Google AdWords accounts and bringing organic traffic through search engine optimization. We also develop websites as well.
So the idea is, if I'm sitting up in the northern suburbs and I want a pizza, there are ways to build your website to where I'm going to find you more than I would someone who doesn't work at it.
Exactly. And lots of different channels or avenues to bring traffic to your site.
You brought up Google AdWords, and I know that's in the commercial too, and you guys give a credit for Google AdWords. Frankly, I read that every day, and I'm not sure I understand what that is.
Sure, sure. So if you search in Google, what you're likely to find right at the top are those two or three spots that say ad next to them.
Okay.
So those are the paid ads, and that's all run through Google AdWords platform. Now, along with that, you can also find shopping ads. If you've ever seen the little images with the prices after you search for a product,
sure,
that's Google Shopping. And all of those are run through the AdWords platform.
So what does that mean then? So you're buying, when you say Google AdWords credit, it costs a certain amount of money to put that ad icon next to your site.
Yeah, so it's actually, doesn't cost anything to put the ad up. It's a pay-per-click system. So when someone clicks on that ad, you're bidding against everybody else that wants to get clicked on,
right?
And you pay Google for those clicks.
Okay, all right. So the other thing is, you know, when it comes to my site or whatever, I try to keep up on social media, and it gets frustrating because I can't. My Outlook, web Outlook, has just changed, and it's taking me 3 weeks to figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So when it comes to placing things on Google or Google AdWords, I mean, I would imagine they're changing all the time, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So Google is constantly updating its platform, adding new features and functions, and keeping on top of that stuff is really difficult for the average business owner.
And so what do you do with companies when they call you?
What's the first thing you do? First thing we do is we do just a complimentary review. We really dig in for about a half hour, and we look at their account and see how it's performing. Are they making a return on what they're giving to Google? And then we basically offer opportunities. Hey, this is going well. Here's something else you can do to get even more bang for your buck, so to speak.
Right. And I know you guys do great work, but I don't want to make this just a commercial for you.
Yep.
Well, why not? Why don't we? No, but so if someone, are there things that people can do on their own as well?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, the biggest thing that we talk about with search engine optimization is getting traffic to your site through people searching in Google is write great content. So content that intrigues and grabs the attention of the users and the people that are searching online.
But that's getting them once they get to your site, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how do I get them to click on my...
Once they get there?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the big thing on your site is calls to action. So a call to action is your phone number in big, bold font on the right on the front of the page, a contact form. And calls to action on your website are really important.
You know, I've found that when I've gone to one place or another, and if they make me work too hard to find an email or a telephone, I just go somewhere else.
Just move on. Yeah, exactly. So we always encourage you know, our clients to look at how, you know, when they get to your site, how easy it is for them to contact you. The easier it is, the more likely they are.
That's a great point. So you don't have to sacrifice your pitch or your content, but you just got to make that stuff easily found.
Yep, exactly.
I know you guys have an event coming up, right?
Yeah, we do.
Tell me about it.
So what we're going to be doing is on December 8th, we're going to have speakers from Google and Logical Position. I'll be speaking about SEO. We'll have someone else talking about web development, and then Google's going to have a representative talking about AdWords to kind of give a free digital breakfast seminar at Loyola University. So
nice.
That's December 8th. We'll be talking to business owners about making the internet work for them and giving personalized advice on their digital marketing strategies. It's also a free seminar, so seats are going to fill up, and you can RSVP at googleinchicago.com. So at googleinchicago.com, you can sign up for this event at Loyola on December 8th. It's a great resource for marketers and business owners who are kind of struggling in the digital ecosystem or just looking to get more out of their advertising.
And so this is exactly what we're talking about. This is something that you can go and learn about short of signing up, right?
Just like what we're talking about now. Yeah, it's a very conversational type event, and we're going to share just some of the strategies that a typical business owner could take in order to get more traffic to their site.
And you've done this before, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We did it out in Portland as a co-sponsored event with Google, which we're going to be doing here.
Okay, give me the website one more time.
It's at googleinchicago.com.
Chris Vail, thank you very much. I'm going to go check my phone number now on my website.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for coming in.
Take care.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.